world at WBAI.org. You can become a BAI buddy by pledging $15 or more per month, a sustaining member of WBAI, by going to WBAI.org and just click on buddy, or call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. That means so much to us. When you go to BAI.org, you can just click on Buddy. Make a sustaining donation, a monthly donation of 15 or more, or one-shot deal. Could you do $50 or $100? It's a tax-deductible charitable contribution. $200, $500, $1,000, tax-deductible charitable contribution. Your call makes the difference to ensure that WBAI continues. It is that important. Yes, independent media is essential to the functioning of a democratic society. Please call 212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org. We can't do this work without you. If you go to WBAI.org, you can just click on Buddy. Thank you so much.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. Extinction Rebellion Radio is hosted by Matthew Kearney and Ailey Slay.
Welcome to the rebellion.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement using nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. You know, last week we spoke with Jean Hsu from the Center for Biological Diversity, and we spoke to her about the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA. And to kickstart our conversation today, we'd like to replay the last 40 seconds of that show.
So when do we say no? When is it time to say no more? And people at this time for this bill had said, it's not now, because,
that's right.
You know, it's not now. It's a couple of years from now where we're getting there. When is enough enough? And I think that is the question that we all need to be asking ourselves. When the hell are people actually going to stand up and say no more fossil fuels, no more sacrifice zones, no more enriching corporations and wealthy people? It's not now, because we still need, you know, this win for Democrats to keep going. When is enough enough? And when are we going to say no?
I think Jean is asking the question that founded Extinction Rebellion, essentially.
That's right. That's right.
She leaves off in that interview. She leaves off where Extinction Rebellion starts. I mean, this organization is meant to use civil disobedience to press for action on the climate emergency. We do not accept anything short of steep emissions cuts. Adding fossil fuel use is unacceptable. It's incompatible with a livable planet. And we ought not to stand for anything that is incompatible with a livable planet.
That's right. And you know what? Extinction Rebellion is a movement that is saying enough is enough. We say no.
And at times we will even put our bodies on the line to express that belief and to try to force the attention of the general public and to try to force the attention of the politicians. It is unacceptable to simply wait until this is convenient for the Democratic Party or convenient for the Republican Party or for this president or for that president or for this Senate candidate in a swing state or that congressional candidate in a swing district. The climate is not waiting for those people.
It is not.
The heat, the fires, the flooding, the rising seas, the mass extinction of plant and animal species all over the world is not waiting for this. The climate does not run on the electoral cycle.
That's right. And the IRA, when the IRA was passed, the atmospheric carbon measured 415.03 parts per million. So, you know, the carbon building up in the atmosphere, that's not waiting either. That's not waiting.
And guess what, folks? It's going up. It's not going down. We need it to go down. But the Inflation Reduction Act has provisions in it that add fossil fuel use. Add fossil fuel use. That's going to put more carbon into the atmosphere than is already there. We need less carbon in the atmosphere than is already there. Now,
you know what? This is the funny thing, Matthew. Somebody, I was tweeting about this because I was very angry about this whole thing and the celebration that was coming with the passage of this particular bill. And some folks said to me, you know, well, it's better than nothing. And, you know, I just think that that is exactly the language of the powerless, right? That's being satisfied with crumbs from the powerful, whether, you know, here's a little bit we're going to give you in this bill, but we're also going to crank up fossil fuel use. I mean, stop being powerless. We should only measure government action against what the science tells us is unfolding and not according to these crumbs that they give us.
I mean, a crumb is better than nothing, but it's only a crumb.
That's right.
It's a frickin' crumb. I think I can say frickin' on the radio.
I think you can say frickin'.
It's a frickin' crumb. I mean, now we should. It is accurate to say that it is factually accurate, as we said last episode, and we'll state it now. It is factually accurate that this bill has more money for solar and wind and renewable energy sources than any previous piece of legislation. So it is historic in that way. It is also factually accurate that the bill has provisions that will directly increase fossil fuel use.
That's right. That's right.
So that's the part that we're not happy about. And that's that. But the combination is convenient for the Democratic Party and with midterm elections coming up, in which they might still get completely wiped out or they might make a go of it. We'll have to see. But it is inconvenient, to put it as mildly as one could possibly put it. It is inconvenient for the planet Earth to have to be pumping more shale gas into West Virginia and to be drilling for more oil in our seas.
So these are some of these folks who are, you know, happy about the climate policies in this particular bill were the same people who were holding up the IPCC report, the recent IPCC report. And I'm just going to read you just one piece. So to remind those folks what they were screaming about when the IPCC report came out, it says reducing greenhouse gas emissions across the full energy sector requires major transitions, including a substantial reduction in overall fossil fuel use, the deployment of low emission energy sources, switching to alternative energy carriers and energy efficiency and conservation, the continued installation of unabated fossil fuel infrastructure will lock in GHG emissions. We'll lock it in. So this giveaway to fossil fuel industries is locking in GHG emissions.
Locking in greenhouse gas emissions. Is that acceptable to you, Elise?
It's not acceptable to me. It shouldn't be acceptable to anybody. And yes, you can pat the Democratic Party on its back. I'm not unhappy that we have some climate measures in this bill, but I'm not naive. This is not enough. It never was going to be enough. And as Gene pointed out in the interview last week, you know, cutting our emissions by half by 2030 was never enough.
And no bill, no single bill likely is ever going to be enough. It's not when XR says it's beyond politics, one of the things it means is it's not that you get one bill passed and you declare victory and you're done. I mean, there are, like, as we said before, there are things in the Inflation Reduction Act that are going to have a positive impact. But it is perilous to think that the fight is over and all set, or even that the fight is over until this next election cycle, or even that the fight is over for Biden's term, or even that the fight is over for 1 month, for 1 week, for 1 day, for 1 hour. It is not. The emissions are going up every hour. So this fight has to continue every hour, every hour, every hour. So this bill and no bill just solves our problems such that we can stop organizing and stop our activism. One of the things we also mean by beyond politics is not to become an electioneering organization, not to make our decisions based on elections, but rather to make our decisions based on the material reality of the planet. I mean, think of it this way. What's the best possible outcome of this election for, I mean, the midterm election that everybody's looking at. Everybody who's voting on this bill is looking at that midterm election, right? So what's the best possible outcome of this election for the Republican Party? And suppose that that outcome happens. Do we get big climate action then? Nope, we don't. Now, what would be the best plausible outcome of this election for Democrats? Suppose that that happens. Do we get big climate action then? No, we don't.
Unlikely.
No, I mean, it's not like all the votes are there if they get the best plausible outcome. You know, we are not two votes in the Senate away from shutting down fossil fuel production.
That's right. Yeah, let's not forget that President Biden is signed on to for more leasing of fossil fuel infrastructure. So let's be clear about what's going to happen.
Yeah,
the Democrats hold power. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Yeah, well, you're right, Elise. I mean, he is in fact part of the thing that we're fighting against. he's you have to change the, so what do you do when even the Democratic senators aren't on your side and the Republican senators aren't on your side and the president isn't really exactly on your side either? We have to change the nature of politics. Now, I don't mean a new constitutional convention. That takes way too long. But we've had plenty of social movements, even in a recalcitrant country like the United States, that have changed attitudes and changed the way people thought about what was good and what was possible. And I'll just use a recent example that actually was relatively quick. The gay rights movement made it okay to be gay. And once it was okay to be gay, it was okay for a man to marry a man and a woman to marry a woman. And it made it okay. It made it not okay to discriminate on the basis of sexuality. And with those attitudinal adjustments in a decent chunk of the population, boom, you get formal equality of citizenship regardless of sexuality. Now, there are still problems with sexuality in the world and in this country, but that is a huge social change. And guess what? It happened fast. Public approval of same-sex marriage went from strong majority opposed to strong majority in favor within one presidential term. Barack Obama was elected president on a platform opposing same-sex marriage. He opposed legalization of same-sex marriage when he ran for president. And then, while he is in office, same-sex marriage is legalized for the entire country. Folks, change can happen, and it can happen fairly quickly under the right circumstances. It takes an effective movement that presents itself well. It takes a movement that's big enough to get noticed and that has moral righteousness on its side. That's and right. To make it a big enough movement, it takes organizing.
Well, that is what we aren't doing enough of. And that's grassroots organizing. I mean, knocking on doors. I've said this before, you know, frequently every Sunday, almost every Sunday, I get a knock on my door. It's Jehovah's Witnesses. They have their literature and they're dressed nicely and they want to have a conversation about what they believe in. And, you know, it would not hurt us to knock on doors, even with COVID, and to have literature and then be ready to talk to everyday people about the climate crisis. And it's not enough to tweet. It's not enough to stage protests in front of Citibank, though I think that's important. You have to have a sustained grassroots organizing campaign. And it can't just be one-offs. We need to be serious about wanting to change the trajectory, and we need to be serious about wanting power. We should not be talking about crumbs. We should be saying, this is what the people want, and this is what we expect of you. And if they don't want to act on what we want, then guess what? We practice and we sustain campaigns of nonviolent non-cooperation, of disruption, whatever it takes to change the trajectory, because, you know, this is really existential. That's not just a word that we're using for fun. This is an existential crisis. People are dying because the weather is changing so radically. The climate is changing so radically. So if we're not willing to do the work to go door to door and start organizing on the ground, all we'll get is crumbs. And while we get those crumbs, the world will continue to burn. You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. And this is Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney, and we're talking about the urgent need to organize and to not settle for the climate action crumbs offered in the Inflation Reduction Act.
When you focus on electioneering and you let the electoral cycle drive your strategy and what you're doing, you get crumbs. When you build a mass movement, if you do it right, you get the whole meal. You're at least potentially over time, you get the whole meal. I love the example of the Jehovah's Witness. Now, I'm not a Jehovah's Witness, and I don't believe you are either.
No,
but on an organizing level, you got to admire them. They actually do. So why has Christianity been so massively successful? A number of reasons. But one of the reasons is, I mean, I'm talking about over millennia, but one of the reasons is that they organize. They organize all the way back to Saints Peter, Saint James, Saint Paul. Those were great organizers, at least if the biblical documents are to be believed. Those people had a lot of energy and they organized. Those Jehovah's Witnesses who come knock on your door, they may not have the charisma that Saint Paul apparently had, but you know, they will talk to you and they will talk to whoever answers that door.
That's
and they
right.
will at least try, you know, they may or may not be perfect every single time, but they will try to meet you wherever you are at. A good organizer can do that. And you know what? Just an empathetic person can become a good organizer. This is not rocket science. I mean, to be the best organizer in the world takes serious skill, but a lot of people can do it. Folks, even if you don't have the time, even if you don't want to wait around for the next deep canvassing workshop. By the way, we should talk more about deep canvassing on this program.
Yes,
but even if you don't want to do, you know, the whole shebang of a deep canvassing training, it's actually not that complicated. You knock on doors or you talk to people and you actually talk to them instead of at them. You have a conversation that lasts for more than a couple of minutes, preferably. And you get better at it the more you do it. The first, you know, you may have some conversations where you get stuck or where you don't know what to do, but over time, you will in fact learn to talk and hear them out. What's their perspective on climate? They think there's no such thing as climate change. They're total skeptics about it. They think that politics is all BS and there's no point in engaging in any of it anyway. They think the idea of civil disobedience is criminal. They don't, you know, they have like a very different perspective than what like a typical experienced Extinction Rebellion activist would have. Fine. Hear them out.
That's right.
And if you come at them in a human and respectful way, there's a pretty good chance that they will hear you out too. And by the time 30 minutes later, when you walk out of off of their porch or off of their lawn or out of their living room or whatever it happens to be, they might give some thought to what you said. And there's going to be some number of people who actually will adjust their thinking in response to these kinds of things. That's basically the idea in a nutshell. That's basically the idea of deep canvassing. I mean, there's more deep psychological theory of it, but that's not really important for our purposes. It's enough to talk to people and to introduce them to perspectives that aren't in soundbite form, real conversations.
Well, a real connection. So that's the other part of it is that, you know, part of it, this powerlessness that we exercise is about being disconnected from one another, not creating relationships with one another and not starting the process of creating systems of mutual aid for one another. So when I think about sort of establishing campaigns of non-cooperation, right? You do that by creating relationships so that, you know, those who suffer because of their activism are taken care of. We know some of us will put our lives on the line and some of us won't, but some of us will make sure that person who just got arrested gets out of jail, that their family is taken care of, that their family is given food, you know, that kind of things. And we can't really start to push up against those in power if all we're doing is tweeting and calling our representatives in Congress and writing and signing petitions. That is not going to do it. They bank on our inability to create relationships with each other. And in fact, they want us to be separate from one another so that we won't have these kind of relationships that will change things from the bottom up.
If the only power centers in society are the political parties, then it's pretty easy for the corporate elite to just buy off the political parties. And guess what? The things that government does is generally what the corporate elites want. And that's where the United States is. there aren't a lot of power centers outside of the political parties. And if you can form one, it ain't easy, but when one forms, it can in fact shift where a political party is or even where both political parties is. And that happened in the civil rights movement. They shifted. Sure. They shifted where the political parties were. Johnson did not want to sign the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, and then he did. Right. He did because he was pressured to through an inspiring moral campaign that included a large amount of attention-getting civil disobedience.
That's right. And part of it is that I think we also have to face our fears of one another. So, for example, we have been laboring and living under the darkness of the Patriot Act, under the darkness of the War on Terror. And so we have lived under a framework that says you can't trust your neighbors. You can't trust these people. Mm. You know, if you see something, say something.
Especially if they look different from you.
Exactly. So we don't engage. So part of our unwillingness to do, on the ground grassroots organizing is we don't trust one another. So we have to cultivate trust, because distrust is what has been cultivated. And until we do that, we have to think about the divide and conquer strategy of the elites, and how much our powerlessness is because of our divisions.
It's been deeply theorized by sociologists. Atomization is one term for this. Atomization, yes. Where you separate people instead of, it's the opposite of building solidarity. It's mm-hmm. the opposite. And solidarity, you can see why if you're on top, then atomizing the population is kind of good for you. Because if the population has a lot of solidarity, they can push you off, or they can push you to do something in order to keep your position. So solidarity is the antidote to centralized power. Solidarity is the antidote to fear.
It is. And we should have conversations with each other about that fear. I think we should have conversations with each other about what the vulnerability we feel when we organize, like, am I going to lose my job? Am I going to be able to eat? And, because we don't have a robust safety net. So to actually, to put your body on the line means a lot in terms of just being able to take care of yourself, which is why I said this thing about mutual aid. We need to create communities that take care of one another, where we take care of one another as we resist. And that's one of the things we need to be moving forward on, is just creating a real sense of community and mutual aid so that those who will put their bodies on the line can trust that they will be taken care of.
Extinction Rebellion is on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. This is Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. We are talking about organizing for climate justice, organizing for climate action, and why it is not a hopeless task, even when the politicians seem disinterested in things that are necessary. In fact, there is hope through organization and through solidarity. Building a suddenly solidaristic society is an awfully big project. And I suppose so is tackling climate change. But they do kind of go together. You can erode the fearfulness by organizing with one another. And these are, in a way, these are different goals. Building a solidaristic society on the one hand and cutting emissions on the other hand. Theoretically, you could do one without the other. But they can help one another. I suppose the most urgent thing is cutting emissions. We're all dead if we don't manage to do that. But by trying to do that, you do erode the fear-based stuff as well. And even the amount of climate activism we've done so far has, in fact, made a difference. They weren't even talking about climate legislation in the UK before Extinction Rebellion disrupted daily life in London for a week. I mean, do you think this bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, which we're not 100% satisfied with, but do you think this bill would even go as far as it does without the climate activism movement? I don't think so. There's a thousand things to say about how activism influences politics, but politics isn't going to do it for us. We have, in fact, pushed them, at least nudged them from where they are so far. The appropriate response is not to stop or slow down, but to push harder. If you're making a little nudge and you want to push it much further, well, don't stop pushing. Push harder. But the Democratic Party isn't there. They're not going to do it for us. This bill isn't going to do it for us unless we drag the politicians kicking and screaming to it. And we can do that with a mass hard-hitting movement.
That's right. So let's follow Jean Sue's questions. When is enough enough? Well, let's say now enough is enough. When are we going to say no? Let's say now we're going to say no. Let's follow her questions and to their logical conclusion.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. The previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, heard Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. Stay tuned for more programming coming up in the next hour. But first, I wanted to share some info with the listening audience. It's about this event that is happening on Saturday, August 27th, and it's in regards to the 40th anniversary of the Women's Press Collective. This party event is happening over at the Lafayette Avenue Presbyterian Church, 85 South Oxford Street, Fort Greene, Brooklyn. And it's from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. Again, Saturday, August 27th. And for RSVP, you can call the number 718-543-5100. That's 718-543-5100. And this is, again, a celebration for the Women's Press Collective 40th anniversary. So, all right, that's what's happening. And also a reminder once again, starting next Monday, August 22nd, all the way until August 26th, from 8 a.m. until 3 p.m., there will be a mandatory tower maintenance shutdown. And that will affect the air of WBAI between the hours of 8 a.m. until 3 p.m. WBAI.org will still be functioning. You'll be able to hear War in Peace, Leo Tolstoy's, oh God, get it together, Reggie. Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace being read during that time. And this also affects other radio stations.